Big ideas will be on the agenda for the next few days around the state. The annual Wisconsin Science Festival runs from tomorrow through the weekend at sites around Wisconsin, including in the Milwaukee area.
It's aimed at both scientists and others in the science fields, but also at students and lay people, with sessions on very big topics like outdoor recreation and very small ones, like what Dr. Justin Vandenbroek will talk about tomorrow evening. Vandenbroek is an assistant professor in the physics department at UW-Madison, and he specializes in high-energy astrophysical neutrinos.
Vandenbroek has been part of the work being done by UW-Madison's IceCube South Pole Neutrino Observatory. He joins us on the line from Madison ahead of tomorrow's event at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the most basic of basic questions. Give us a primer on neutrinos. These are subatomic particles, but what is their role in the universe?
That's right. Neutrinos are subatomic particles that have no charge, so they're kind of like neutrons. But they also have very little mass, so they're even less massive than protons and electrons. And they were produced in large quantities at the beginning of the universe. They're also produced in huge numbers in the middle of the sun and also in Earth's own atmosphere. But what we're trying to do now is actually use them to see way beyond the sun, to actually study the universe using neutrinos rather than different types of light.
The fact that they have no charge and they are almost no mass, or possibly no mass, I gather, must make them incredibly hard to detect. How did we even find that there were neutrinos in the first place?
Well, they were first discovered, they were theorized actually first by a theorist, and then they were discovered at a nuclear reactor actually in the 1950s. So they are also produced in nuclear reactors here on Earth.
So if they have no mass and no charge, what do they interact with?
They interact with normal matter, but with a very low probability. So the vast majority of the neutrinos that reach the Earth actually travel all the way through the Earth without hitting a single atom.
So, okay, one of the places that you're studying neutrinos is this IceCube laboratory at the South Pole. Why is the South Pole an ideal place to conduct neutrino research?
The South Pole is a great place, actually, because it's got the clearest solid substance on Earth that occurs in large quantities. And so if you look through the ice, if you were to go a mile deep in the ice at the South Pole and look straight through it, you'd be able to see for hundreds of feet through that crystal clear ice. And that's important because the way we detect these neutrinos is that when they hit an atom in the ice, they kind of explode that atom in a very high interaction and make a bright flash of light. And so we can detect that bright flash of light through hundreds of feet of the crystal clear ice.
That's amazing. But to be able to do this, it has to be a very large detector, right?
That's right. Because they interact so rarely, the vast majority travel through the entire Earth, including the entire detector. And so we need to basically instrument a large volume and monitor that very large volume for these bright flashes of light.
So to incredibly oversimplify this, the larger the detector, the better the probability that that a neutrino will interact with something in the detector.
That's right. That's not an oversimplification. It's as simple as that. You need a big volume because each interaction is very unlikely.
Can you give us a sense for what IceCube looks like and how the work there takes place?
Yeah. So I had the chance to help build IceCube while I was back in grad school, and it was thrilling to be able to go to the South Pole and help construct this project. So it's all deep under the ice. So when you go there during construction, you see basically hot water drilling equipment. So it's basically a giant hose that squirts hot water down in the ice, drills 2 miles deep in the ice, and then we lowered these strings of detectors down into each hole. And so in the end, you have 86 different holes that had strings of detectors lowered down into them. They then froze back into place, and the hole was filled with hot water that refroze into solid ice again. And so right now, it's from the surface, it just looks like ice again. But deep under the ice, there's a cubic kilometer of these sensors, and they monitor a billion tons of ice.
Wow. Well, and I gather this construction had to go on during what would be the summer at the South Pole, right?
That's right. It's a very busy season. There's only about 3 or 4 months when you can work down there. And so there are 3 shifts per day during the construction season of drillers producing these holes and then scientists lowering the sensitive instrumentation down into them.
What was your role in this?
I was one of the scientists as a grad student who helped lower the sensors down into place and do calibrations and measurements and so on. And then I also helped understand the data once the equipment was up and running.
Well, and let me ask the question that you probably get asked a lot. What, you know, this was summer at the South Pole, and yet what was the temperature during summer at the South Pole?
It varied. Typical value was maybe minus 40. There were actually a few, once in a while, every 2 years, it's actually colder in Madison than it is at the South Pole because it's summer there while it's winter here, but typically about minus 40.
Wow. So this is work that could not have been easy to do, even for as well-dressed as I'm sure you were.
That's right. We were working outside often in harsh conditions, but it's really thrilling, so you're not really worried about your, you know, your personal comfort. And, of course, you've got these giant red parkas that people see in movies, and you're well-equipped to stay warm there.
This was like a decade ago, right?
That's right, when I was in graduate school. And since then, I've joined the faculty at UW-Madison, so now I'm working with students and scientists to analyze the data from IceCube and to understand the exciting data coming out of it.
Right. So I imagine that there are scientists who are there, you know, year round, a fairly small number, I would imagine, in the winter, but most of the science can actually take place back in Madison.
That's right. We have two people who spend the winter there, and they're actually just going there now to start their year long winter there. Basically monitoring the detector, making sure everything's running well. But we're actually running, taking data more than 99% of the time, and that data arrives in Madison over satellite connections. So we're analyzing it all the time, including, you know, computer automated analysis that lets us know if anything exciting happens. It lets us know instantaneously.
So what have we already found out by studying neutrinos in this way, and what do we still hope to find out?
Well, the very exciting thing that we discovered only a few years ago in 2013 is that there are astrophysical neutrinos produced across the universe. So we've known for thousands of years, basically, of humans doing astronomy, looking up at the sky, that it produces photons abundantly. And kind of the story of astronomy is studying different types of photons from radio waves up through gamma rays. But now for the first time since 2013, we can actually do astronomy using neutrinos rather than light. And the neutrino does produce them abundantly. We don't know yet what's producing them, so that's a very exciting mystery.
And so presumably that's what's next out there. That's what you're hoping to establish.
That's right. And there was actually a very exciting event just a few weeks ago where we saw a very high-energy neutrino, and there was also gamma-ray emission detected from the same direction on the sky. And so that's whatever's happening in that direction is a subject of very, very high interest right now.
To go back to the actual IceCube Observatory at the South Pole, I meant to ask earlier, is climate change having an impact on the ability of IceCube to collect the data it needs to? Is the ice shifting in ways that it did not before?
Not at the South Pole. Where IceCube is actually at the geographic South Pole, and this is on a very high plateau. It's on actually 10,000 feet of ice. So its particular location in Antarctica is fairly safe. That said, of course, there's a lot of climate change impacts around the boundary of Antarctica, especially in what's called West Antarctica. And also, actually, we use IceCube to study the history of climate. And so the ice that we're using is actually hundreds of thousands of years old, and we can use instruments inside IceCube to understand the history of the climate by studying that ice as a kind of time capsule.
This is almost like the ice equivalent of dendrochronology, the study, you know, being able to study tree rings.
That's right. It's actually looking on even longer timescales, and we call it paleoclimatology.
Well, I would imagine that could almost be a subject for an interview itself. But in the meantime, Justin Vandenbroek, thank you so much for sharing your work with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Justin Vandenbroek is an assistant professor of physics and astronomy at UW-Madison, and he works with data from the IceCube South Pole Neutrino Observatory. He'll talk about his work tomorrow evening as part of the Wisconsin Science Festival and the museum's Science on Tap series. There is a link to more from WUWM.com.